Hi everyone. We're gonna start in just a moment as all the Zooms catch up with everybody. Okay, I think we're in a good place to begin. So welcome to our Friday afternoon discussion. Thank you all for being here. I'd like to really start with a personal note today, and just that, you know, I really hope all of you are managing well. For those of you working at home, as I am, as our whole staff is, you know, at times it might seem like isolation. So I'm going to channel my inner my mother and tell you that I hope you're making time to get some fresh air, even if it's just standing at the front door or opening a window. Take a walk. 6 feet apart, you know, take a day off to binge watch some show, do a puzzle, bake a cake, but really to take care of yourselves, so that you can be there to take care of your grantees. Because if you burn yourself out, then you're not doing anybody any good. So, take care of yourself. You know, thanks for so many of you who, not only, through these discussions with your comments, but people who've been dropping us notes and writing in, sharing your ideas, people who are volunteering to come on and speak, letting us know that these chats are helpful. That's always a good thing to hear. And as always, we welcome your ideas, your topics, your issues, things you think that we should be talking about. Remember, we're a membership association, so anything we do really needs to work for you. So hearing from you is probably the best way to know that hopefully we're doing that. You know, as each week we have many Exponent members, we have some other leanly staffed funders who are not members. The shameless plug is you should be. And I'm pretty sure that today we do have a couple members of the press that are going to jump in at least for some point and listen in to all the good things that are going on in Frederick, as we're going to talk about in a moment. So before we dive into that, my colleague Madeline Shore, as always, is co-piloting here with me, and she's going to just briefly run over Zoom for any of you unfamiliar with the technology. Madeline?
Yeah, thanks, Henry, and hi, everyone. I'm so glad that you're here today to hear what will be a great conversation. We ask you to keep yourself on mute in order to hear the speakers talk. And the best way to have your questions be seen by us is to look at the bottom of your screen and open up the chat window, and you can chat me individually, or you can chat everyone in this call, and we will answer the question to the best of our ability. If it's really specific, we might follow up with you after or point you to a resource of ours that could better answer it. But again, just please keep yourself on mute so we can hear the speakers and utilize the chat function to get your questions or ideas or comments out into the call. And with that, Henry, I'll turn it back to you.
Thanks, Madeline. We're grateful to our guests for sharing. You'll meet them in just a moment. As always, remember, things might be right for you. They may not be. So listen and learn. Take what works, keeping in mind that it may need adjustment to your circumstances. You know, I like to think of each week and what we hear from different people, they're like Lego pieces. And we may use ones that help us build what we're trying to build, and we may not use others. So take everything with your own perspective as you think about how you might do it. And people have been great about not soliciting for their own funds or whatever. So thank you for continuing not to do that. What we really want to concentrate today is on collaboration during this whole crisis. And to help us do that, we have three guests, all from the same town, not too far from DC here, and they're all in Frederick, Maryland. Kerry McHugh is both a staff member and a trustee for the Helen J. Sereny Foundation, named after her grandmother. Kerry's also an Exponent Philanthropy board member. She's also the leader of our Next Gen program, and I'm proud to say a grad of that program. So welcome, Kerry. Next is Lee Adams, who's the executive director of the Osherman Family Foundation in Frederick. And finally is Chris Colville, who's the CEO of the YMCA of Frederick County. And so two funders, one nonprofit, they're doing some really interesting stuff around collaboration. And I think there's a lot of great lessons to learn from them. Quickly, before we jump into really talking with them, some of the highlights of things we've learned, we've heard from you from prior calls, many of the actions that you're taking, providing more flexible funding and reporting, including relaxing of timing and timing of reports that are due, streamlining grant applications, getting funds directly to those who need it, contributing to relief funds, giving more than planned or expected, surveying grantees for their new and immediate needs. I know we're going to talk a little bit about that today. Planning for the unseen, going viral in your operations, and moving to electronic payments. If you're not aware, my colleague Brendan McCormick, who is every week is standing by to jump in if my internet goes down. Brendan compiles and capsulizes our chats each week and posts them usually by Tuesday of the following week on our COVID-19 webpage, which you get to from our homepage. So if something was said or you miss a call one week, you can go back and you can hear it. And with that, Kerry, perhaps I'll call on you first, and followed by Lee. So for context, would you again give everybody just a very brief overview of what the Serene Foundation does under normal circumstances?
Sure. So we are a small place-based. Sorry, I just muted myself. Small place-based family foundation based in Maryland. We fund in three counties in Maryland and then a couple statewide organizations as well. And we focus our funding on advocacy and systems change around issues around cyclical poverty and poverty alleviation in a nutshell.
Great. Thank you. And Lee, the Osherman Family Foundation.
We are also a small place-based Spend Down Foundation located in Frederick County. We have a combination of family members and community members as our trustees. Carrie's actually one of our trustees. We focus our philanthropy on three areas, grant making, convening, bringing people together for nonprofit summits, educational opportunities, and community benefit projects. And a lot of times those projects around real estate deals like bringing a new theater to the town.
Great. And just where are you in terms of that spend down?
So we have about 15 to 18 years left.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you're still a player for a while. Great. And finally, I want to welcome Chris Colville, who I said is the executive director of the Y in Frederick. And that's not, this is the first nonprofit that we've had on one of these calls. And I think it's important for all of us to understand their perspective, because remember, we're in a partnership with the nonprofits we fund. Yes, we give them money, but they deliver services. And so, Chris, we're delighted that you're here. And again, would you just give people a very quick snapshot of, in normal times, what the Y is doing? Are you muted?
Yes, sorry, I was. We're a nonprofit organization, and we are operating, we're a fee-based entity, meaning that probably between 90 to 95% of the monies that we earn on an average annual basis are actually earned revenue. So we only rely on about 10% to 15% as unearned revenue or general support from the community. We typically have a 60-40 kind of revenue mix. 60% is the national model for the Y's coming from membership, and 40% coming from other programs such as childcare and youth sports, swimming, aquatics, things of that nature. And we're approximately about a $17 million operation in Frederick, Maryland.
Great. Thank you. So from our prep conversations, or prep emails, to be honest, I suppose, you know, my understanding, Kerry and Lee, is that you're part of two primary collaborative efforts right now going on in Frederick and Frederick County. Kerry, why don't you tell us a little bit about the first one?
Sure. Yeah. So the first one that came about was a co-funded grant opportunity, which it started with about five funders, and I think we're up to seven or eight, Lee, if that's correct. We've had more people join in as time has gone on. Basically, what's happening is the United Way of Frederick County is soliciting funds from the public. So individuals who want to support nonprofits in the community can donate directly to a fund at the United Way. And then the Community Foundation and a few other private foundations, some of whom are members of Exponent as well, pooled funds together and opened one streamlined grant application, that grant for all of the funding, whether it's from the public or from individual funders. So that grant application is housed at the Community Foundation. So nonprofits in the community can apply once can apply directly through that very shortened grant application form about what their needs are coming up from the COVID-19 crisis. And then all of the funders that are participating can view those applications and select which ones they are able to fund based on their board directives, their decision-making structures and processes, and their mission and focus and priorities. So far, the priorities have really been towards meeting urgent needs, and the definition we're using of urgent, for better or worse, is things that are sort of increased needs in the community based in order to address the COVID-19 crisis. And then we are also seeing a lot of applications coming in for just ongoing operations for organizations that have lost, large portions of their revenue streams. And those I think we'll continue to talk about as time goes on. But up front, we've prioritized things like organizations that need to purchase masks or food, those kinds of really upfront needs.
Yeah. This is all happening at the Community Foundation. And is the United Way involved in that, or is that a separate program altogether?
They are involved in that. So it's all been collaborative. So the United Way is accepting donations from individuals in the community because the funders in general were hearing from community members. We want to support nonprofits. How do we do that? Where do we send money? Where is the fund? So that lives at the United Way. The grant application lives at the Community Foundation.
Great. So the United Way is coming to the Community Foundation, reviewing these applications as if they were another Serene Foundation.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. Yep. I'm wondering, when you said we're concentrating on urgent, at the moment, when you say we, does that mean the Serene Foundation in reviewing these, or was there a universal agreement among all the funders that are reading these applications that they would prioritize urgent?
Both and yes. It sort of happened rather organically actually, but I would say all of the participating funders right now are focusing on those urgent needs, in order to make sure that we are supporting the organizations who need to remain open and need to adjust their normal business practices in order to accommodate things like social distancing and those types of things. Lee, feel free to chime in if you have anything to add there, but I think it happened fairly organically that those were the kind of, yeah.
So Lee, who initiated the whole concept?
Well, so our foundation, the six of us that are really work collaboratively, we do a lot together, and we all use the same grant software, Foundant.
Hold on one sec. So when you said the six of us, you mean the six foundations?
The six foundations.
Yeah, okay, not six Oshers.
Yeah, the collective foundations of Frederick County. We meet periodically throughout the year through the founders of the group, the staff, the executive directors, the different meetings. So this was a kind of a natural thing for us to come together on. So I don't think there was really one person that was taking charge of it, but collectively how we were going to respond. And since I would say every like two weeks, we get together as a funders group and review, okay, where's the funds been going? Here's everything that's been asked for, who's not getting funded, how can we get them resources? So it's been very collaborative in nature in the decision too.
So it sounds like perhaps one of the keys to success right now in this working is that you six had already established a very collegial, collaborative, great working relationship. So in some ways this just, I don't want to say make light of it, but this crisis fell in and you had all the infrastructure in place to take it head on.
That's fair.
And in terms of, for instance, coming to that urgent need, any disagreement among the group? Was there a push that we should, save some money for once we get past, as I call it, the coffee and blankets phase or whatnot, or taking it as it goes?
We've kind of been going day by day and need by need. I think it's worked out fairly well so far that some of the funders that are participating have the flexibility and sort of nimbleness to make decisions within a day or two. And some of the funders that are participating, because of the way their processes work, they need to engage a grant review committee or multiple board members or something that takes a little bit longer. So by default, some of the more urgent needs have been funded by those who have the flexibility to fund within a 24, 48-hour turnaround, while some of the sort of I don't want to call them less urgent because all of the needs are urgent right now, right? I mean, we're talking about the sustainability of the organizations in our community. So they are all urgent, but some of the less time sensitive, if we want to call it that, needs have sort of, by default have lingered in the application and review process and are now being reviewed by the funders whose processes take a little bit longer for decisions to get through. So, and I think there are still ongoing conversations. There are ongoing conversations going about whether or not there will be multiple phases of funding as we get a clearer picture of what the long-term needs are for the sustainability of our partners.
Is the, Chris, please go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to say we're very fortunate, Frederick, that we do have these six funders that collaborate already behind the scenes pre-COVID-19, right? So that's a blessing for us and our community. What I think has been one of the bigger challenges for us is just even identifying what actually are the needs within the community and how do we get our hands and our head wrapped around, you know, where the needs exist and how do we kind of coordinate that effort on behalf of the community at large. And that's where some of the, I think, challenge has really become or lies. It's not so much maybe identifying the funders that want to step up and not having a community that doesn't want to support the nonprofit sector. It's really more about the nonprofit sector even being organized within and of itself to say, you know, here's the little piece of pie that I have that I'm responsible for, and how does that interrelate to the piece of pie that you're responsible for, and where is the overlap, and how do we get all of us on the same page? And so that's where I think some of the greatest challenges still lie within our communities.
So I'm going to go totally out of order from my notes, and without looking at them, I'm doing this from memory. But my understanding is, Lee, that you helped organize a regular phone call for the nonprofits, correct?
Yeah, partnership with one of our trustees. It started with, we just, right when this kind of started to happen, we just all went out to call some of our nonprofit CEOs and just say, how are you? What's going on? What do you need help with? And then started to hear kind of not trends, but just what was happening. And then we decided to put together calls, bringing maybe like 5 or 6 and got up to 8, just Zoom calls, kind of hearing what their critical need was and what resource they might have to give others. And that we saw so many amazing things come out of those calls. And Chris will share one of those later. But it was just amazing to see an organization say, I need adult depends. You know, we're having a big trouble trying to get that. And another organization would pop in and say, I have some in my back of my donation room that I'm happy to give you. And so that back and forthness started to happen. And from that, we as a trustee board designated $15,000 that we took and immediately got with suppliers and bought bulk items. And because Chris, the Y was open, we shipped everything to her. And then her staff, and she can talk about this later, really became like this collection and distribution hub for our bulk things. So that was like masks and gloves and hand sanitizer. And we were lucky that we found a local distributor who was able to get his hands on some of those things. Gift cards to grocery stores, bleach. And so that those funds, diapers, helped address some of the things on the call. And then we would put out kind of like action items of what we heard on the call, what needs were, and people started to kind of connect back and forth with one another. So we really saw a lot of great outcomes. You know, the immigrant population in one of our parts of our county, they were not able to get food out there. We brought in the nonprofits that we know that work in that space and figured out where the drops could be, where they could help educate that, you know, where they get medical care, so things like that.
Lee, you were the instigator, and I say that in every positive sense of the word. Do you lead these calls, or have you, like, started them and they're on their own?
Of our trustees who really feels fulfilled with this kind of work has been really involved as well, and she's been kind of co-facilitate with an agenda and managing the call. I do a lot after the call, you know, connecting certain people based on things that resulted from the call. So we've had a really good response just from our trustees who maybe aren't typically involved in projects like this that have really been hands-on and felt incredibly fulfilled. We went out of our process, in addition to the money that we supported and contributed to the collaboration, when the Community Foundation was working on that shared grant application, a survey went out to all the nonprofits, I would say maybe 30 or 60 nonprofits, asking the same, the very simple question. It was a Google form. What is your critical need and what resource do you have to share? Our trustees then took that information, that survey, when we pulled out, I want to say 12 organizations that we funded that needed critical things like, in addition, you know, bleach or supplies, or their clients that lost their jobs and they needed rent assistance and that kind of thing. And we just sent out checks, $10,000 to $20,000 checks, with the message that, like, we're here for you through this and we're just getting started. And that's something that through my 5 years at the foundation, we've never broken our policies to do something like that. And it was very rewarding to see kind of how that just kind of transpired.
I know from prior calls and from lots of conversations with many members over these last few weeks, many people are doing that. And obviously, you know, as the accountants say, cash is king, and people love to get that cash. But I think it does really project, in some cases, some hope, which can be really important in the times of a crisis, but also the sense of partnership that, mm-hmm. that as the funder, you are empathizing to some extent that they have these needs. And it also goes to, you know, the concept of trust. Here's the money. If you need it for A, you need it for B, you need it for C, you're the one in the trenches and it's really not our business to be telling you what to do. Chris, I'm curious from your perspective as one of the nonprofit leaders, I'm guessing I know the answer, but it sounds like you guys feel pretty comfortable talking with a funder on these calls and sharing with one another and even non-competitiveness among nonprofits who, you know, in many situations are all competing for that same pool of money. Am I getting the right impression?
Yeah, absolutely. I had actually sent an email out the week before I got a call from one of the Osherman trustees to, you know, our city or county, some of what I would have deemed as kind of our local government entities and other folks that should have been, you know, and probably most likely in other communities might have been responsible for pulling resources together and kind of launching a community-wide plan, and didn't get very much or little feedback from that. So when I got the call from Renee regarding, you know, kind of, hey, what's the why need and what can we do to support you? My immediate thought was, you know, while this is going to pinch and this is going to hurt the why a little bit financially, without a doubt, I'm more concerned about the other nonprofits and what is out there kind of globally in terms of, you know, again, where are the greatest needs? Who are the most vulnerable? Who's taking responsibility for organizing that? And that's when, you know, the trustee from the Osherman said, well, I can be the one that's the convener and pull the groups together. And I'm very glad that she did. You know, in the absence of having, you know, whether it's clear direction on a national level, a state level, or even on a local community level, I would say that, you know, one of the lessons learned and my thought and my challenge to you as funders on the phone would be, is to have a plan and to have a plan in place prior to a COVID-19 or any other kind of natural disaster, meaning I would welcome funders to bring the community of nonprofit leaders together in advance, meaning identifying who are the key, you know, nonprofit stakeholders, what types of services or resources will be needed in a crisis, coming up with a list of all of those kinds of things in advance, and knowing and having a plan in place so that, you know, if we ever have to deal with something like this again, or we have some other kind of natural disaster that we have to deal with, we've got a group of folks already kind of lined up and ready to go that have their particular niche or area of expertise. And we know there's going to be nonprofits, right, that don't have a lot of financial resources that they could bring to the table. But that's not to say that they might not be some of the strongest actual leaders that we have within the nonprofit sector, meaning that they're, you know, they're strong strategic thinkers or they're visionary types of folks. So even if there's a nonprofit within your community that might not have the same physical, financial resources available, let's say like a larger nonprofit such as the Y, they might have strong leadership. And so just having a plan in place and pulling all your folks together in advance of something like this ever happening again, I think would have expedited the plan that we currently have in place and what we've rolled out now.
Yeah, I think, Chris, picking up on your remarks about some of those smaller nonprofits that may not be the big kid in your town, and in every town, what's big, what's small is relative. Yeah, oftentimes those smaller nonprofits are the ones that are much scrappier, much more clever, because they perhaps don't get as much funding. And I think you're right. There could be great lessons to be learned. So this may be a loaded question for all three of you, but do you expect this funder conversation to continue when the virus is in the rearview mirror? Maybe not every week, maybe not as often, but just as the funders have their regular check-ins and stuff, is this a good model to encourage nonprofits to be doing as well?
My expectation is that they would continue to talk and continue to collaborate behind the scenes, and even bring some of the, you know, continue to bring some of the nonprofit leaders into the conversation, even if it's for, you know, a slightly different type of conversation, but to kind of help us get organized and to help us, you know, again, like I said, kind of create this plan of attack for other such issues.
Go ahead, please, Lee.
To add to what Chris said, one of the reasons I think why it was kind of easy for us to pull some of the connections with the nonprofit leaders together was the foundation hosts executive director breakfast a couple times a year. We have about 30 to 40 nonprofit executives that attend three times. It's normally an hour and a half. There's a topic. We bring in a guest speaker, or the topic is just collaboration and talking among themselves. They have to have at least, I want to say, one staff person, but we've been doing that. That's helped a lot of people build relationships in our community. It cost us really nothing, I mean, besides breakfast. It's something that we really enjoy doing, and I can see in the future topics that Chris is correct. We should really, really do some more action planning during those times. And then as a funders group, I think we're just kind of getting started. And, you know, we've been doing a lot over the last couple of years, but this is the first time we've tried that shared grant application. And who knows, maybe the future something will result from that, where we could look at general operating or something that we could do. And we're very aware of how much time it takes our nonprofits to apply to all of us. And that is why, you know, we've tried to all implement GuideStar across the board and make sure that if they have their rolled out collective trainings, to make sure that their GuideStars were updated so that would save time. So I think we're just getting started as a community of funders as well.
I would add, I think as lean funders, we have a lot of conversations amongst ourselves around the idea of contributing to organizations beyond dollars. And one of the things that I don't think I had seen come up in conversations as often before this crisis was really engaging nonprofits in that conversation. So I think from a funder to nonprofit standpoint, we have those conversations. But what's happening now, and Chris can talk a little bit more about the example of Westmar in more detail, but we're seeing nonprofits share resources that they have, and they are able to share beyond dollars. So yeah, Chris, to your point, you know, not all of the small organizations have the budgets, but there are resources that currently aren't being used because programs have been canceled and events have been canceled. And so can we reallocate some of those resources to meet some of these really critical needs right now, and then figure out the funding component of it down the line? So
Chris, go ahead, please.
Sorry, honey. I think you said earlier that I might be the only nonprofit on the call. So if that's the case, then I know what I'm going to say. I'm not necessarily committing career suicide here. So what I would say again to the funders on the call is, again, take the lead. And Carrie kind of said this already for us, but as a funder of your community, you can create the expectation that we as nonprofits will all work together and share resources. I would say that, and I'm a nonprofit, right? And so I'm okay with that and know that that's good business and that that's the right social responsibility type of response that we should all have as a nonprofit. But I think as funders, it's okay to create that expectation within your community and within your nonprofit sector that we should all work together and be willing to do what we're forced to do now, but do it on an everyday basis.
You know, I often talk about we are all together in an ecosystem and we all work together, and that system breaks down when we change that middle C of eco to a G and it becomes an ecosystem. And somebody's ego, whether it's the funder or the nonprofit or whatnot, takes over and starts to break down the system. And so, you know, seeing people working together, because ultimately, whether you're Chris running the why, or you're Lee or Kerry who have the privilege really of providing funds, in the end, we're all there for the benefit of the residents, in your case, of Frederick County and that area. Those are the ultimate beneficiaries. Yes, we are funding the nonprofit, but the nonprofit is the conduit to reach those people. And I think that's oftentimes something we forget. We think we're here to support nonprofits. And yeah, we are on the balance sheet, but ultimately it's to support those people who come to your why and benefit from all the services that you provide. Kerry, I want to jump way back to the beginning before I threw pages out the window and started switching up the order here. When these, a couple questions. One, are people who are contributors to the Community Foundation who may have a fund there, are you making these applications available to them to look at also to see what needs are?
That's a good question, and one I don't entirely know the answer to because I'm not inside the Community Foundation. Yep. I will say there were many donor-advised funds within the Community Foundation that actually issued match grants for the United Way's public campaign.
Okay. Yep.
So a lot of the individual funds that are held at the Community Foundation participated in that way. I know the Community Foundation is committing some of their unrestricted funds towards this effort, and they have had additional funders come in and contribute as well. But I'm not sure how they're facilitating making the applications available across their internal yep. funds. I'd be happy to ask and find out.
Just curious. And is there somebody watching out to keep some sense of balance so that, the six foundations and the United Way, you review these applications and everybody is drawn to Chris and the why. And so all the money goes to her and it's missing other places. Is there some sort of reckoning among people just to protect that? So that, yeah. you know, Chris doesn't get overloaded.
Yeah, let's not get crazy now, Henry.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Only coffee in the mug.
One of the things that we talked about when we first set up the idea of one central grant application, we had multiple conversations before we launched that publicly, and one of the things we discussed was whether or not it made sense to do an application within each funder's respective online portals, and as long as the material was the same, then organizations could just copy paste the same application over and over again. But we realized very quickly that could lead to exactly what you're talking about, Henry, that one organization would get funded six times and another organization might not get funded at all. So that was part of what drove our decision to house the application in one place. And then we have a very rudimentary spreadsheet that every time a funder makes a set of funding decisions that are related to the applications that have been submitted, we update that spreadsheet just so that everybody has a clear picture of sort of where the collective funding is going. So it's not a complicated thing. It just lists funders and nonprofit recipients, and that's
sometimes
the entirety of it.
Yep. Yeah. Sometimes simple is best. Just one last question, I think, on this whole thing, and then we'll move along. What's been the public response to all of this? Is the public sort of even aware how the foundations are operating? Has the, you know, United Way campaign, if I can use that term, been pretty robust, or are people looking to the foundations to pick up the bulk of the need? I'm just curious. And maybe Chris, I don't know if you have a thought or, and maybe looped into that too, Chris, do you continue to receive direct donations? Just people who are sending you a check, maybe your regulars, but the, can I call them the irregulars? The people who would not normally fund you, are they, you know, saying, I think the Y needs help?
Yeah, so I think my perception from the United Way initiative in partnership with the group of funders has been received very positively. I mean, I think they have raised significant dollars in a very short period of time compared to other, you know, annual initiatives and other crises that we've, you know, had to deal with. I think this has been probably one of the few that everybody has stepped up and responded to pretty quickly and pretty significantly. I also say that we're also very blessed that the Frederick community as a whole, and I've been working with the Y for 35 plus years in 5 different states, that Frederick, I think, community members generally respect and understand the significance that the nonprofit sector brings to the community in terms of what they provide and for basic services and activities on a daily, weekly basis. And they know that the cost, if the nonprofits weren't able to continue and be in business to do the type of unique work that we do each and every day, that the cost to the community would be much greater than it is by not having a nonprofit survive through a crisis like this. So I think we're very fortunate in that regard. And we're doing soft, we're not doing any kind of hard campaigning right now. We do have some pleas on our website, some videos by me, some, you know, updates going out on our website, constant, you know, communication with our membership. Our biggest hope is that as a member of a Y, that they won't terminate or cancel their membership during this crisis, even though we can't serve them in a traditional manner. But in terms of outright pure philanthropy types of initiatives, we're just really not moving forward with that right now, because a lot of the people, like the regulars and even the irregulars, as you said, we know that some of them, if they're not coming from the deeper, larger foundations, might also be struggling financially.
Okay. Lee, did you have something to add?
I agree with everything that Chris said, and to your point about what is our community doing to kind of help promote this, I think it's just kind of starting a lot of this work, collaborative work, has been happening behind the scenes. And I mean, just today, the newspaper called hearing about what's happening up at the Y, which Chris will talk about in a minute, that resulted in some of these collaborative calls. So I think our community is just, you know, like everybody, just so tired of hearing bad news, and the fact that all these good stories are coming out. From talking to the reporter today, he's told me that they have different angles that they're trying to do to continue this story for the next week to share some good news. So that was, hopefully we'll get more support for the United Way campaign and kind donations that Chris is collecting.
Good. Lee, I'd like to stick with you for a moment and maybe move on. And in past weeks, we've talked about some survey work that people are doing to understand what's going on in the community. And I think that's another, the second of these really great collaborative efforts you guys have going on in Frederick. So would you like to share a little bit about that, please?
The survey that just went out, you know, the foundation was going to send it out, and then we found out that United Way had just said it. And this is right when we were all starting to work together. So we embraced their survey and had them add the question about what resources do you have to share. And really, it's what was your organization's name, and what is your critical resource that you need right now, and what resource do you have to share with others? And that was literally all it was. So, Carrie, do you think there's anything else that I missed from that?
Nope, yeah. We tried to keep it as short and sweet and optional, frankly. Yeah. I mean, it was not a requirement for any organization because we know that people have a lot on their plates. So our hope was that by asking the question once, we would get a better understanding of kind of the resource needs and availability without being too much of a burden.
Yeah.
So that was one of my questions. Did you worry about adding to the burden just like, you know, using one common application minimizes the effort?
Yes. You know, when 2 weeks ago, when I think the fury kind of started, we were nervous, like, are we calling too much? Is there another survey and a grant application? But I think collectively working with that funders group, we were able to kind of space it out a little bit and say, you know, I talked to this organization and we're going to all use the same exact survey. I feel that it was more strategically done, so they weren't getting burdened. I mean, Chris might have a different opinion because she was the one probably getting lots of calls from people, but we tried, we attempted.
I think the survey was pretty easy, but I would say that for me anyway, it got buried in my emails and I knew it was kind of out there, but a week had gone by, and for our agency, we hadn't even filled it out for ourselves. And so we took the time to do that, but it didn't take long at all. So it was pretty easy. And I think the application process for actually requesting funds has been pretty user-friendly. I have a chief development officer that's taken the lead on that, so I get to kind of bless the final content and make sure that we've captured everything. But again, most nonprofits, if they're really scrambling and they're still serving and stepping up and providing critical needs to the community, we don't even really know yet what the damage is. I mean, to be honest with you, we're kind of flying blindly, so to speak, in some regards. I mean, we have some estimates and guesstimates of what the financial toll is going to be. But at the same time, because there's still a critical need out there, we don't have the luxury to put everything on pause and to, you know, shut the doors completely. We still have to operate. And even though we know that there's a significant portion of our business that will forever be changed, the landscape of how we do business will forever be changed.
Right. I think whatever normal we all return to will be a new normal. There'll be a reset. It will not be like it was 6 months ago. So it sounds like, going back in time, Lee, Kerry, you guys had this great collaborative on the funder side. You've now created this phone call among the nonprofits. It feels like, picking up what you said, Chris, you guys are really well positioned for moving into the future when we get through this immediate need. And as you said, Chris, who knows what's going to happen 6 or 8 months from now as the smoke clears and hopefully the virus is long gone, but what's the damage that's been done? And so any thoughts on how all these collaborations, these different methods you've set up are going to play out over time, and any lessons for people about this, about the value of having, you know, had that set up. Lee and Kerry, if you didn't have that funders collaborative conversation established for a few years, do you think it would have worked as well? That was an easy question, Mike.
Frankly, I don't think it would have worked as well. I think in anything, philanthropy and nonprofits, I think it's all very relationship-based. And I think it's very trust-based, and relationships and trust take time. So I don't know that we would have been able to come up with exactly this type of collaborative effort if we didn't already have these kinds of relationships. I like to think that we would have ended up with something collaborative, that we wouldn't all be operating in our own individual silos. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that that would have been the case. So I think the more work we can do to maintain those kinds of relationships and those kinds of dialogues, both across funders and across nonprofits and from funders to nonprofits and vice versa, the better off we all are in the long run. That's my take. I don't know, Lee and Chris, if you agree.
If Frederick's a relatively small community, six significant foundations in part of this the grouping. I know that there are other communities where there may only be one foundation, but also there are other places with many more foundations and many more nonprofits moving in parallel. What advice? How did the whole collaborative among the funders start? Somebody at some point had to raise their hand or dip their toe in the pool or whatever cheesy cliche we want to use. How did it begin, and what was the motivation? And so what can people think about in their communities that they may do?
I think it began a couple years ago at the founder, the head level. They would do a philanthropist roundtable breakfast, and just the principals of the group would come and talk about, you know, their goals maybe once a year, and just kind of building that relationship. And then I think the executives kind of started to do the same. But the real benefit, I think, is that our grant makers are work monthly together on just tweaking their applications and best practices and sharing things. If somebody, knows a nonprofit that they need to help, they kind of just all work really well together. And Kerry sits on a lot of those calls too. So just at the different levels, I feel like I've done different things over the years.
Yeah, we started like maybe 3 or 4 years ago, Lee, talking about coming up with a common app for our grants, which has not happened. But as a result of that, we now have monthly phone calls to talk about other things, or monthly in-person meetings when we're not in the middle of social distancing and stay-at-home orders. Mm-hmm. It started on the staff level. I would say it started very organically. We sort of had this idea that maybe we could mm-hmm. simplify our grant applications. And mm-hmm. I really think we realized that even though that particular project was not going to get the traction that it needed in order to become mm-hmm. a reality, that there was benefit to just having regular conversations anyway and learning from each other. So.
And we all work together on, you know, the nonprofit summit that we do for our community, where we bring the keynote speaker and provide a whole day of learning for the nonprofits to, a lot of times they don't get to send their staff away to conferences. So we kind of bring that to them. So some of the staff of these foundations that we have worked every year, putting these events on, and we do other trainings collectively that are identified through those calls. Like, for example, if we are seeing that we need help with reporting, we'll identify a consultant and roll out a training to the whole community, say that's presented on behalf of this group. So we've done a lot of that kind of stuff in response to being able to work together.
So there's a question here regarding to all this. And the person's wondering if there's any suggestions or things that you would suggest to watch for that they might give to people who are trying to, great line here, microwave their attempt to pull this collaborative kind of thing together. She's saying that her community has a group that's been working towards this, but now, you know, they're doing it as Mel Brooks might say, ludicrous speed. And so any things to watch out for, any tips on here's how to microwave it?
Yeah, lots. I think my gut instinct, if you're doing this on a super fast track, is to make sure you have buy-in from whatever level of leadership you need buy-in from with different organizations. So different structures have different levels of staffing, for example. So I am staff for the Helen J. Cerini Foundation, and I am also a board member, which means I have a lot of flexibility to participate on all of these different kinds of calls that Leah is talking about. At the Community Foundation, their grant making and grant management staff is very different from their executive staff, which is different from their board. So within each organization, we kind of had to make sure that we had buy-in from whoever the ultimate decision maker was, so that as we got into sort of working group meetings, whoever was representing a funder in those conversations had the ability and authority to sort of move a project forward. That took a little while, I think, frankly, to get the right group of people together and the right decision makers, depending on what the conversation was. So that would be if you're fast tracking, just make sure you have the right participants in the room, right people in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You really touched on it earlier, but I don't know if Lee or Chris, you want to just reiterate, because we're sort of in the context of other conversations. The emergency funding for supplies and the way that the Y has stepped up as the warehouse and distribution point and really working with the committee. Any other thoughts to add from beyond what you had said earlier?
Finding the bulk stuff was helpful. Sorry. And Chris's staff has been amazing for being able to just kind of break it up depending on who we've talked to. But I cut you off, Chris. What were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, for us, it was just kind of a no-brainer because while many of the businesses and organizations are closed because they're not deemed essential, you know, organizations or businesses that are allowed to remain open, because we're providing emergency childcare for first responders, well, we can't do the health and wellness side of who we are, and we can't do all the other types of programs. We are allowed to keep our doors open. So from 6:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m., you know, there's a place to go. And where a lot of the nonprofits who might need these resources, they're working from home, they're not in their offices if they have offices. And so it just kind of made sense, since we knew we would continue to stay open at least Monday through Friday, that we could be kind of the receiver of the goods, and then to Lee's point, take responsibility for organizing it and boxing it up and then redistributing it. So I've got staff that can, you know, jump in their vehicles, jump in our Y vehicles, and can take the time out of the day to make deliveries to the individual families or to the individual nonprofits that are still operating on a limited basis. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of made sense. But the funders group kind of took the wish list of what are the big hot items, ticket items, and had the means, financial means, to be able to order, you know, thousands, you know, 10,000 masks, thousands of gloves, thousands of bottles of a hand sanitizer, all those kinds of, do some bulk purchasing along with smaller individual donations and just have that shipped here. So it just kind of made it easier for everybody to have one central place to drop it off. And that's not saying that there aren't other little, you know, initiatives happening in pockets of that happening throughout the community, because it absolutely is. But we weren't sure, again, who was open, who wasn't open, and what that was going to look like. And we knew we had to stay open for at least that purpose. So,
yeah, I think one of the things that came, that really surfaced in those original surveys and original phone calls, was the question of space. And as we talk about what resources people need versus what resources people had available, I think, Chris, you really stepped up when other nonprofits in the community said, we have the ability to do a lot of this, but we don't have the space, whether it's for storage, whether it's for housing. So I don't know if you, I'm going to take on a Henry role for a second here and ask you and Lee to talk a little bit about the Summer Camp Westmar work that's happening, because I think that is I just think it's an incredible outcome of all of this, that those kinds of resources are being shared. So.
Yeah, I think, and Lee, chime in, cut me off whenever you want. I think there was one of our other nonprofit agencies that typically provide homeless shelter support to a lot of adults, and they were concerned about how do they take the number of individuals that they currently serve and how do they spread them out into multiple locations, because they have to be concerned with social distancing, they have to be concerned with the group size that you can have in a particular room, like no more than 10. And so for them, it was just a logistic nightmare, right? And so they were trying to figure that out. And one of the solutions for them at one point was looking at hotel rooms. So subdividing, keeping some of their most critical or high needs clients in their existing facility, and then maybe getting some hotel rooms for the others. But as they were dealing with that, they started to get just inundated with phone calls of other families and folks in the community that might have been kind of living on the edge and living kind of week to week by paycheck to paycheck. And some of those families were living in hotels, and hotels is not one of the types of businesses or housing arrangements that is protected by not being able to evict somebody for not being able to pay their bill. And so they had folks that no longer found themselves employed and without a job, and therefore weren't going to be able to pay their hotel bills. So they started to get a call from a target population that they really weren't used to serving. And as I was listening to him tell this story and thinking about, well, what do we have in terms of resources for the Y, I immediately thought about our summer day camp. We have a partnership with the American Legion. We have a 72-acre facility in the north end of the community. It's about, mile-wise, it's probably maybe 10, 15 miles out of town. In a car, it takes maybe closer to 20 or 30, because you got to go up through the Catoctin Mountains and don't get lost in Camp David, or that'll be a different discussion. But, you know, I just felt like we know from a Y standpoint that we weren't going to be utilizing that facility most likely until the summer, if we come back online and can actually still be in the summer camp business. And that wasn't going to happen until the end of June. So the CEO of this organization was really looking to find a short-term solution. Where can I find, you know, 10 to 12 weeks of short-term solution for this new target population that I typically don't serve and I'm not prepared to serve? I don't have the right resources. I don't have the right facility amenities. So I immediately kind of blurted out, without thinking it through, you know, financially, what's the logistic nightmare that this is going to create for not only my staff, but for his staff? How am I going to go from being in a resident day camp business, you know, in the summer, to tabling that, to potentially being in the homeless shelter business, basically overnight? And, so it's, you know, he actually called, he was calling my cell phone and we were on this call. So I had to postpone him for a few minutes. So hopefully he's got what he's needed. But some of their families are coming up there as early as today. So we're starting to serve families. And we think we can take somewhere between 45 to 60 individuals. And it'll be a combination of potentially single adults, but mostly families with children. And it is going to be, there's a lot of logistics that have to go into this. But I just felt like I've got this resource. I know right now it's underutilized, and we as a Y would be remiss if we didn't offer up this resource. I don't know what it's going to cost us to operate it, to man it, to staff it, to, you know, keep the utilities on, those kinds of things. We're taking some stabs in the dark, but it really doesn't matter. We're not looking to collect a fee from this agency. We're offering up it to for free to them, and we're just trying to backfill it with volunteers and our staff and their staff and other community resources. So it really is kind of a big puzzle that many, many folks are trying to put a little piece into the puzzle to complete it. And I don't know if it's complete yet.
Very cool.
Chris has been the real MVP of our community. I mean, Steve, the Y continues and has always, but just right now has just stepped up left and right to address whatever the need is. I mean, they're hosting blood drives. They're doing the collaborative drive. They're doing this. I mean, it's just so amazing. We're very blessed to have Chris and her team always.
Yeah, it's incredibly impressive. And I think with all due respect to Chris, I think there are people like Chris in every single one of our communities. And part of our job as funders is to find them and support them and help them in their work. Because as I said, it's an ecosystem. We're partners in this, and we need to do that. Madeline, I just want to give you a hint that I've been trying to answer some questions, ask questions as we go along, but in a moment I'm going to ask you if there are any that you want to pick up that I've missed. But so I've just got a couple of closing questions for the three of you. Which of these practices do you think you're going to keep post-pandemic? And, you know, is there an opportunity to reshape how all of you work together? What are your thoughts?
When do you go first? Because I have thoughts, but I've spoken a lot already. So one of you guys go first. And
all right, Lee, what do you think? I'll be the teacher here.
I think we're going to continue, you know, obviously we'll do the executive director breakfast, maybe continue these town halls and we're bringing nonprofits together to discuss needs, to discuss collaborative opportunities. Obviously I want to continue the Frederick funders working together to streamline our, how we give out grants to the community. And then just continuing to establish, maintain these relationships and support, encourage the collaboration that's happening. I mean, I have said so many handwritten thank you notes today and in the last couple of days of just, you know, thanking the church that I found that is driving and hand delivering bags for the immigrant nonprofit that we support and just little things like that. So I want to continue to make sure that we're celebrating successes too, even after this.
Thank you. Kerry, it looks like you have a helper to help you answer this question.
Yes, our youngest trustee has just joined. For the rest of the
as
call.
I said, Kerry runs our next gen program.
So. Yep, there you go. I like to start them early. Yeah, I think I'd echo a lot of what Lee said. I think you know, it's I go back to what I said about it being about relationships and about building trust. And I think in order for those relationships to be strong enough to weather and sort of come in useful in times like this, they need to exist and be invested in on an ongoing basis. So we can't only call and ask for favors when, you know, we're in the middle of a global pandemic and it feels like life as we know it is no longer, right? We have to be there for each other in all the moments in between. So.
I think Eamon agrees. And Chris, you said you had some thoughts.
Well, just I'm not as skilled as some of you are. I can try to pay attention to the conversation, read what's happening in the little chat group, and then try to type and respond to that as well. So, but I'm just looking at some of the questions, and Aaron had asked a question about, you know, trying to understand, as funders trying to understand the relative need among large and varied set of, you know, grantees in terms of what is their financial need going to look like. And I'm saying if you have organizations in your community that have a business model where, let's say, it's a fee-based business model, which I would advocate for, that most nonprofits should have really strong, you know, good operating models, and to have a, you know, some kind of combination of, you know, fee-based revenue versus unearned revenue. But if you're an organization like the Y, as one example, that is largely a fee-based organization, I will say to you, when you are not allowed to operate and your doors are shut and therefore you can't provide these fee-based types of programs and services, it's going to be a financial hit that we're going to see through all of the remainder of 2020 and probably even into part of 2021 by some accounts, because this is probably a revenue stream that we will not have the capacity to make up, a fee-based revenue stream that we won't have the ability to make it back up, because some of us might be limited based on capacity and not being able to double book or double up on the types of classes and services. If I think about the Y in particular, as the largest childcare provider in the community, I'm currently, while I'm still open and providing critical care for childcare and first responders, I'm doing about less than 10% of the childcare business that we normally do in the community. And for me, for every month that the local school district is not open, the hit for us in terms of revenue, it's about a $600,000 a month loss of revenue stream for every month that we're not able to operate in the school district. Now, if you've got other smaller nonprofits that, if they do have revenue streams and they're not able to provide those types of services where they typically collect fees, it's going to be detrimental to them, you know, down the road, because they're probably not going to be able to make up that revenue. But you, some of your expenses, while you might be able to minimize them to some degree, you're still going to have fixed expenses that will go on regardless if you're operating fee-based programs or not. You know, you still have debt to cover, you still have facilities to operate, you still have utilities, you still have all these different things that you've got to navigate through. So, you know, the price tag for this, whether you're a small nonprofit or a large nonprofit, is still going to be pretty overwhelming. I'm fortunate to work for an organization that I believe has a good sustainable, typically sustainable model, and our infrastructure, you know, puts us in a better position maybe than some of the other smaller nonprofits within our communities. I don't know what that would look like for them. If I was in their shoes right now, I probably would be crying in the corner somewhere. I really don't know what that's going to look like.
For Chris, I think you make I think you make a really great point, and I think something I hope all of us who are funders really think about. I've heard people in general terms refer to the COVID-19 disaster and try to build a parallel, if you will, to a Hurricane Harvey or a Hurricane Katrina. And there are many parallels. But I think there's something distinctly different, that whenever it is, if it's over the summer or in the fall, when it's safe to go out again and the virus is beyond us, if you drive down the main street in Frederick or any other town, things are going to look the same to a great extent. Whereas if you drove through New Orleans or Houston, you're going to see flooded out neighborhoods, you're going to see destroyed homes, and it's going to just mentally put it front of mind for you. So I think we have an obligation as funders, as this recovery happens, to really keep our eyes open and our ears open and really reach out to our nonprofit partners, the people like Chris in every community, and have those real frank discussions. It may not be glamorous to give them funding to pay the electric bill, but you know what? If they can't pay the electric bill or the heating bill, doesn't matter if they're running childcare in the middle of January, if the kids are sitting in there freezing. So there's, thank you for that, Chris, because I think it's really important that we all understand that.
And the last thing I would just say is, well, I know that there are, federal options that are being offered out there, right? There's Care First, there's a bunch of different federal programs and different initiatives, even on a state level, that are being out there. And I'm not saying that the nonprofit sector isn't going to have an opportunity to apply for some of those reliefs that are being offered, but navigating through what's being distributed to us on a federal, from the federal government and even from a state level, it's, I mean, you almost have to have a degree in rockets. I mean, it's they're not easy types of documents and things to understand. And even if you do qualify for some of the funds or the relief that's being offered, it's going to come down to a timing issue. Because cash is king, and right now, when you cut off our cash flow and our revenue stream by not being able to open our doors and operate our businesses, while there might be, you know, hope down the road from, again, the federal level, it's a timing issue. And there are some folks that, you know, might be able to float between that, and there's other entities that are not going to be able to survive between that gap of funding.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a long haul coming back. Madeline, any particular questions that popped up that we haven't perhaps touched on?
Yeah, I have two questions that are under the same umbrella for Carrie and Lee. Are there any funders in Frederick that aren't involved in your partnership and collaboration? And then to add on to that, do all of the kind of foundations in Frederick have a similar mission? So it was maybe easier to help start the collaborative effort, or are you all pretty different?
I think we all have things that make us unique. I mean, there is definitely some similarities, and those have come out in some of the discussions, but I think we celebrate the things that make us different because that's equally as important. The county is also involved in our group. They're not able to disperse any funds through this emergency fund, but they are releasing theirs early and they're involved in the conversation. I don't know, Carrie, do you have anything else to?
Yeah, I think, I mean, there are absolutely funders in the county who aren't part of the co-funding, right? The small working group of six funders that already works together, we sort of started, we sent out an email to all of the foundation heads that we know of, inviting other people to participate. And we had some people who did join in, and we have some people that we just didn't hear back from. There are some corporate funders that I think are kind of laying low for the time being or doing their own thing, depending on their individual situations. And then, there are some people who aren't participating, but everybody that we could think to invite was invited to participate, and everybody has different priorities and processes, so not everybody can. I do think we have different missions and different focus areas among the funders that are participating. A lot of the people that are participating are very place-based, so in that we're very similar. But I think one of the things that has worked really well about the sort of single grant application with all of us reviewing is that we are able to sort of continue to fund organizations that are mission aligned for each individual funder, while also making sure that some of the smaller nonprofits are not getting overlooked and that we're meeting all of those really critical, urgent needs as best as we can as they come up. So great. I don't know. I hope that answers it. Mm-hmm.
So maybe one final question for each of you, same question. So whoever goes last gets to listen. Just quick overview. Any advice in general for our community of lean funders as they, march on into this, you know, really still evolving crisis? Chris, maybe you from the nonprofit side.
Well, I think it goes back to even, you know, going back to what I said originally, which is, you know, post this, if you could pull together, you know, your community of nonprofits within your own areas, and maybe it's about prioritizing. And again, you know, a lot of nonprofits are all going to say what we do is the most important thing out there in the community. I get that. But if the truth be told, I mean, we could probably prioritize types of services that really are the most critical. And once we identify who are the most vulnerable members of our community, and maybe that's where you start. But I think having a plan and working through that in advance of ever having to go through something like this again can't be a bad thing. I mean, I think, you know, I think we've done well with what we had in place already. And I think, you know, but I think we could do a better job in preparing for whatever that next bump in the road might be, so that, you know, it's either a quicker process, an easier process, or just a little slightly more organized response, and having a better understanding of what it is that a particular agency might have identified as, you know, something that's important to them and what their most critical need is going to be. Knowing that information in advance would be helpful, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying it very eloquently, so I apologize.
Lee, any parting thought?
I don't think so. I think just even the like I said earlier, like the little check-ins and stuff have been helpful, and they've helped us too. And just continuing just every day to just think how fortunate you are, and how fortunate we are to live in a community with nonprofit leaders that are making a difference every day.
And Carrie?
Yeah, I was going to say something similar to Lee. I think at the end of the day, this is not business as usual. So, you know, there's a lot of really good advice going around in these conversations and all of the sort of conversations around partnership. But I think my biggest takeaway for people is that at the end of the day, we're all people. And to just, you know, be cognizant of that. Everybody's a little bit freaked out and a little bit scared for all of their own very valid and very different reasons. So trying to be patient and give people a little bit of space to have those kinds of feelings and those conversations, check in with your partners. You know, remember that there are people on the other side of this. These aren't just dollars and programs. It's really impacting people's lives in ways that I think it can be impossible to even imagine. So.
Great. Before I thank the three of you and before people disappear, I have sort of one announcement and one question where I really need your help. Next week, we expect to have three member trustees. So we've been talking to a lot of executive directors. Next week, we're lining up a few trustees to talk about their perspective. And that will start to get in, I suspect, a little bit to how they think about their portfolios and spending money, not spending money, those kinds of decisions. So we're working hard to try and get these lined up a little bit further in advance, so you'll see what's coming. The second one is really sort of almost a personal question. I'm in response to some member questions I've received. I'd really like to know if any of you are working in providing direct services to your members, for instance, providing them tax help or legal help or communications help, that kind of thing. So if you're doing it, I'd love it if you drop me a note. It's just henry@exponentphilanthropy.org, because I'm trying to help some members think some things through. So would appreciate that. Madeline, before I thank everyone, any final remarks from you, or want to let people know how they can continue sharing?
Yeah, if you have a question that pops up this weekend, or you want to just keep this conversation going. I know a question came in at the end that we didn't get to. You can post it in our member discussion community. It has over 800 people online, and many people are posting all the time. And so I'm sure our members would be happy to continue the conversation there. I know they have been the past few weeks and even after these calls. So I would just encourage you to keep using the member discussion community as a way to connect outside of these calls. And look out for a new blog on Tuesday that Brendan will write, kind of summarizing everything that Carrie, Lee, and Chris talked about.
Great. Thanks, Madeline. So again, my thanks to all of you for coming. My thanks to Carrie, to Chris, to Lee. I think the residents of Frederick and Frederick County and the environs are pretty lucky to have three strong women like you taking care of a lot of stuff. And I visited the community. It's a pretty cool place. I was able to attend one of your nonprofit summits and actually see in action the amount of community in action, how everybody worked together. So thanks to the three of you. I really appreciate your time preparing for today and your time for today, giving us today. And to all of you watching, hopefully we'll see you next week. Go to the COVID-19 page for more information, and don't forget to wash your hands. Thanks very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for having us.